Welcome to the Bill Bradley Collective. This is our final seasonal focus. We're talking about dynasties, which we'll get to in a minute. This is a rainy, kind of miserable Sunday night. The Jets, once again, were incapable of putting up double digits in scoring. But we've all recovered from that, and we're ready to start our day. How you doing, Zach?
I'm doing all right. I mean, I just watched the Jets lose 13-8. You know, even when I'm out, I was like, oh, I don't care about this game. I'll do other things. And then, you know, Simeon comes in, and I'm like, oh, maybe. And then, nope.
When both the third and fourth down plays are, is it a fumble or is it an incomplete pass? That's a rough start. It's a rough way to play. Trevor Siemian, the greatest Northwestern quarterback ever?
I'll get back to you when you come back to me. How about that? Let me think about
we'll
it.
We'll do that. All right. So, Zach, who is the lead singer of the song We're Sending Our Love Down a Well?
It has Krusty. It has Rainier Wharfcastle. It's Sting, right? It's Sting. And then he goes in the well to dig, yeah.
And part of that joke is that he was a ditch digger in high school. And there's also a throwaway line where Chief Wiggins says to Apu, and the canary died, because Canary in a Coal Mine was a popular song that the police had in the moment. Do you know who he was their second choice? You know who their first choice was?
No.
Springsteen. And Springsteen has managed to reject all Simpsons requests. How are you doing, Andrew?
I'm all right. I'm a little wet. Obviously, it's been raining all day, but I walked out of my apartment. It's like a 2-minute walk, like my front door to Zach's store. And within 15 seconds, it's like the rain like picked up kind of heavy. So I got dumped on for a minute and 45 seconds. But I'm otherwise fine. Good. And I think he probably is. Northwestern went to a Rose Bowl in the mid-90s. I have no idea who played quarterback on that team. I mean, maybe him, but I can't really think of anybody else that would is on the level of Trevor Siemian.
Trevor Siemian being the Northwestern quarterback Hall of Fame. In a mid-90s bowl game would be fantastic.
He's the Bo, Bo Nix. He just plays all the time at Northwestern. Here's an aside. The coach of Northwestern, whose name I cannot remember, did as good a job coaching as anyone has done in my lifetime. Because that team, everyone who started left. And he played with nothing but backups and finished 7-5. I think they were 7-5.
They're definitely bowl eligible.
They're definitely bowl eligible.
If he's not Big Ten coach of the year, I mean, Harbaugh didn't really coach besides, 3 or 4 weeks. So it's got to be. Yeah.
It could be Ferentz.
It could be.
Like that team who just fucking never scores. However, they played two teams in the top,
CFP?
Plus they played two teams in the top 50 and got outscored 56-0 between the two of them.
Checks out.
By the way, just selling Zach, if you bet Northwestern the under all year.
Northwestern or Iowa?
I'm sorry, Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
You would have gone 10-3 or 10-2 and made a handsome profit. That's
pretty good return.
I knew that and bet them in parlays where the other half never paid up. So the Jets in their lifetime have had 3 first round picks who made the Hall of Fame. Who are they? And are they dead or alive? Jesus. 2 are offensive, 1's defensive.
Joe Namath?
Yes.
Okay.
Is he dead alive or quasi alive?
He's active on social media. He's alive. I think he's full blown alive. I'm not sure it's him doing the tweeting, but Don Maynard?
No.
Defensively, Oh, Revis for sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
And he is
alive. Chubby, but alive. shit.
So now we only have one more.
Damn. Lineman?
Nope.
No.
Super Bowl MVP.
With who?
Not the Jets.
Not the Jets. Yeah. Super Bowl MVP with. Sorry.
From Kansas.
What position do you play?
Running back.
Not Zonka.
No. But very Zonka-like.
Who the fuck?
He was Zonka during the time of Zonka. A little later.
Go ahead. Who is it?
John Riggins.
Oh, God damn it.
Is Riggins dead or alive?
He's alive because wasn't he talking about Sandra Day O'Connor, that whole thing all week after she died?
I didn't know that.
Is he alive? Am I making this up?
No, he's definitely alive. Well, I didn't know he was talking about Sandra Day.
There was a thing with them back when the...
they had a thing?
I don't think it was romantic, but when like Washington was winning Super Bowls, they were like friends, apparently, in the D.C. social circle of the time. I'm telling you right now, Google after this, John Riggins and Sandra Day O'Connor. Justice.
All right. So this is why we do this podcast, because there is not another podcast of the 1 billion podcasts in this country. No other podcast is bringing up the relationship between Sandra Day O'Connor and John Riggins.
I swear I'm not making this up.
So, Zach, this was your strong vote. What is the dynasty we're talking about?
Today we'll be talking about the Roosevelts. A New York family of wealthy elites who went on to serve in the administration of presidents or military, then both as president, and one of their wives, who was perhaps the greatest first lady of all time.
There's no perhaps.
Well, maybe Abigail Adams.
That would not have been my first choice. In terms of accomplishments.
Yeah.
The problem is everything Hillary Clinton did, she did better. Well, she was not Secretary of State. But then again, she didn't lose to Trump. So, did you look at any of the previous history of the before Teddy?
No, I have no idea what I've read FDR's biography, but like I know their family came from wealth, both sides.
So, they come in from, the patriarch is Kleist Martensen von Roosevelt. They arrive in New York in 1625.
The Dutch?
Yes.
Yeah.
Among their predecessors is James Roosevelt Bailey, the Bishop of Newark and Archbishop of Baltimore, who lived from 1814 to 1877. From 1726 to 1794, the co-founder of the Bank of New York is a Roosevelt. Cornelius von
Schwab. Yeah, that was Franklin's side, I think.
Yes. In the Teddy side, Cornelius von Schock Roosevelt Sr. co-founded Chemical Bank. So they co-founded the Bank of New York and Chemical Bank, both of which still exist and have been bailed out by the government many times. There are a shit ton of Olympic gold medalists, Olympic athletes in there, including Andre Roosevelt, who has the weird triad of Olympic gold medalist.
In what event?
Film, I don't know.
Oh, sorry.
film director and sculptor. He was a nationally known sculptor.
Renaissance man.
Right. And
big time.
And then when you also look, they married Goodyears. They married DuPonts. They married Vanderbilts.
Very like old European monarchy, like the wealthy families make deals.
This isn't.
That's why he married. They both married their cousins.
Right. This is old money. I went to the, it's going to be a little loose today. I went to the Providence Zoo to look at the Christmas lights with my lovely stepchildren, because this is what we do. And Adeline was trying to explain, who's 13, was trying to explain to 8-year-old Juliet what old world aesthetic was. Old money aesthetic. What does old money aesthetic mean? And she said, it's conservative clothes. It's cardigans. It's grays and blacks and whites without being showy, but not in a Taylor Swift way. And I thought,
I don't know what the hell that means.
It's not bad. I don't know.
Pretty good.
I know. It's kind of.
But I don't know what not in a Taylor Swift means. I don't know what the
biggest
hell
that cardigans.
Means. Well, that's how
so, what,
youth, man.
Mr. Rogers wore a cardigan. What the hell is she talking about?
They have no idea who Mr. Rogers is. But regardless, this is old money.
Yes.
Old, old money. And the Roosevelts seem. Let's be clear. All the Roosevelts, and we're going to talk about the big three, Teddy, Franklin, and my favorite, Eleanor.
We could have talked about Teddy's daughter, Alice. She was great.
Alice was great.
Yeah, the princess of America.
Teddy's sons were not great.
Nope.
Teddy Roosevelt Jr., kind of an asshole. And we may get into this. Eleanor Roosevelt actively worked against him in his mayoral campaign and was upset that it seemed to disrupt the family.
Just business.
It's business stuff. But anyway, I guess we start with Teddy. Right?
He came first.
Right. So Teddy's chief of police in New York. He's mayor of New York. He does all these New York things.
He's police commissioner.
Police commissioner of New York, and he does stuff. And then he becomes vice president to McKinley. And he not only hates the job, he publicly hates the job. He will tell everyone who's in here that this is the dumbest job in the world, and he wishes he didn't have it. And he spends most of his time just kind of traveling. Going around doing shit because McKinley didn't like him. McKinley had nothing.
Well, they were from different factions of the Republican Party.
Although,
FDR was a reformer.
Is this the last time McKinley's from Buffalo? No, is he from Ohio? He's from Ohio.
Ohio, yeah.
He's from Ohio.
Roosevelt was of the reform Republican Party, right, which had economic liberal policies and, really, McKinley was like one of the last stalwarts or whatever they call themselves.
Yeah, McKinley's economic policies were very much aligned with Grover Cleveland.
Yeah, they're just all out of touch.
Well, Taft goes back to those policies. Yeah. And then we go back with a vengeance, starting with Reagan. Like we say, we'll see those policies and raise you 50. But anyway, so... forward. But then McKinley, to Teddy's great luck, gets shot.
I was gonna, when you said McKinley, my first thought was he got assassinated, right?
Yes,
yeah. Okay.
In Buffalo,
When Teddy became vice president, people were terrified of this happening. Terrified
that he was that close to like
that he was thrown. Yeah, they were like, what are you doing putting a madman as the vice president?
Let's realize in a 40-year period, three separate presidents have been shot and killed.
No,
the Secret Service not getting the best of the brightest,
derelict.
And so Lincoln gets shot in 64, Garfield gets shot, I believe, in 82. And McKinley gets shot in 99? It's 99.
99, yeah.
1899. So within 37
years. Before 1905, so it's within the 40-year span.
Right. Within 37 years, three different presidents have been killed. He's killed by an anarchist. They believe in nothing, as they say in the Big Lebowski.
Sure. Say what you want about the, yeah.
Say what you want about the Social Democrats.
At least it's an ethos. Yeah.
The idea that Bill Simmons refuses to watch that movie.
Doesn't like the Coen brothers.
And hosts a movie podcast.
Does not like the Coens. Inexplicable. Get him off. You're fired.
It's
his company, but.
No movie has aged better than that film.
It's comfort food. I have a bad day. I pop that on. I feel better 2 hours later.
So Teddy takes over. it's a weird position because, as you said, Zach, his economic policy and McKinley's economic policies have nothing in common.
No.
And Roosevelt decides that rather than kind of take advantage of this weird situation, he'll concentrate on foreign policy, where I think we would agree that's aged less well than is that domestic policy.
I mean,
it's not much less well.
But it was a big undertaking in the Navy. You know that.
Well,
was,
yeah, he made the Navy the best in the world. Even though it was,
you know, that I think that's a point of pride for our country. You know, especially like constitutionally, we need the defense of our borders, which exist in the sea.
Actually, you could say that he's the first modern president in terms of foreign policy.
Yeah,
for good and for bad. You know, he goes to the Philippines, gets involved in Cuba, he gets involved in South America in ways that were effective.
It starts
but
the
problematic.
It starts the legacies of Republicans messing with Latin American affairs, which continued up until our last one. Yeah, even Trump did it.
Yeah,
I kept going up until today.
Yeah. Well, we just recently saw a debate in which every candidate on the debate stage for the Republicans said they would attack Mexico.
Biggest trading partner.
Right. But we're going to attack them. And that'll improve the deals we get on trade. You know, the kid that gave you his lunch money was also your biggest trading partner.
Yeah.
So he named the White House in his first term. It had never been called the White House before.
And he's a genuinely weird guy. Like, both Roosevelts are weird. But, like, Teddy's, you know, he's bombastic, and he's the Rough Riders and the military, like.
He's Ernest Hemingway.
Yeah, he's just like a weird guy.
When you read, like, you know Hemingway, Andrew. When you read about Teddy Roosevelt, you read about Ernest Hemingway, oh, they're the same guy.
Yeah.
Like, Hemingway was nice. I mean, Roosevelt was nicer to his wife, but mostly because he just left her a lot.
Hey, he was always in Africa.
He was the first president to leave the country during his term because he went down to Panama.
Yeah.
He was, to kind of pull this back a little bit, these are old money people. Both, all the Roosevelts are old money people who kind of struggle with being old money people in different ways. Would you say that connects the three of them?
I would say that they all have a service to others that that wealthy elites in their stature typically don't have. I think that came from their experiences, though. For Teddy, when he was New York police commissioner, he would go around to the slums of where people live, and that's why he became big into being into housing and tenements and apartment housing rights when he was in charge in New York City. Like, he's, you know, it's these experiences of that they see that really, I think, shapes their worldview of their difficulties of, like, how much privilege they had. Is like, the Roosevelts were, you know, one of the 20 richest families in America.
Oh, yeah. By far. Probably top five. Franklin struggled with it in a way, probably less than the other two did. But Teddy also was very sickly as a child.
Yeah.
Like, he was on the verge of death, puberty.
It's why he has such a weirdly big upper body, because he couldn't move his legs. So he just worked on his chest all the time. So he looks weird. He looks strange. He looks like a Joe from Family Guy.
You know who he looks like? Did you see Tiger Woods today walking onto the course?
Yeah.
He hasn't had a leg day in forever. His upper body is like, he's like massive, and his legs are kind of, because he obviously had lower body injuries, are kind of spindly, but he is like top heavy, man. He was making up for leg day.
And because he was that, he also is a guy who rides a moose across a river. Yeah. He goes to the River of Doubt.
He gets shot
and finishes his speech. Yeah. Like,
It'll take more than a bullet to kill a bull moose. What a cool guy.
I'm not sure he would have been a great hang.
No, neither. I bet FDR would have been fun because FDR drank a lot.
Eleanor would have been fun. Because you could have got, you know what? Because she would have been your wingman. You would have picked up the second best looking woman in the bar because Eleanor. Other things. Eleanor and Franklin had an open marriage.
Yeah, they had an agreement.
Yeah, which
basically like
seemed
she
to come and go, but like
yeah, basically it was like I'll be the first lady or the first when he was governor, he's like I'll be the first lady. When he's president, I'll be the first lady. But like I'm gonna go do my own thing. She founded the Red Cross.
It's Bill and Hillary. If Bill and Hillary were actually as good people as they think they are,
yeah.
We'll get back to Teddy. Because this is an all over the place one. Because the
they Roosevelts all kind of overlap. Yeah, they overlap constantly.
They have several of the same problems. Like they're all problematic. Even Eleanor is slightly problematic. Kind of a virulent anti-Semite.
I honestly had no idea they were related until they're fifth cousins, right?
Yeah.
Teddy and Franklin. And isn't Eleanor?
Eleanor is a
niece,
second cousin to Teddy. I think she's a second cousin to Teddy.
It's a little, it's a little problematic in itself.
They're keeping the money in the family.
They are.
I mean, the reason that like Eleanor Roosevelt would have been absolutely Hillary Rodham Clinton, except she would have been Eleanor Roosevelt Roosevelt, and that seems weird. So
touche.
But all right. So one of the things he does, though, is he, in his first term, coins the term the bully pulpit.
Yeah.
And
the presidency wasn't really.
It was.
You didn't. Lincoln shaped the power of the executive, but the presidency was still just like a job.
Well, Lincoln shaped the power of the executive during wartime.
Yeah.
And Teddy said, no, it's all the time. And some of that in his last year is for the worst. Like, at the end, there's overreach. Like, with Franklin, there's overreach.
No, I don't think so. Not with Franklin.
He tried to stack the Supreme Court, which you were against now when the Supreme Court is stacked.
I probably would have been for it. Back then. Yeah.
Like,
I would have found a reason.
If it was wrong, how is it okay for Franklin to do it, but it's not okay when McConnell completely changes the rules, not once, but twice, to get very young, ideological zealots into the positions.
McConnell didn't change anything that's written in the Constitution. Those are Senate rules. That's different than the makeup of a constitutional branch.
Was Franklin trying to change the makeup of a constitutional branch?
Yeah, he's trying to add. Like, it's been done before. It had been done before at that time. The Supreme Court didn't start with nine. Start with five, down with the seven. Now it's a nine.
I'm not sure this is the most intellectually consistent argument I've heard from you.
Yeah.
Own it.
But you know what Emerson said? Consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. The other thing that Roosevelt struggled with is he had super majorities in both houses and Senate, and he was not in line with the Republicans of his time.
No.
Same problem Roosevelt had.
Well, you have to.
Franklin Roosevelt.
Yeah.
So then the second term, he comes up with the square deal. Is that the first deal?
Yes. It's a Roosevelt thing to call things deals.
It's a New Deal, the Square Deal. What was Johnson's? That was a Great Society.
Yeah.
So they, yeah.
Now there's the Green New Deal.
Yeah, that's good. I forgot about that, unfortunately, because it hasn't been brought up in years.
Everybody forgot about it.
He brings up in 1902.
It's snowing in Dubai.
Nothing to see.
Nothing to do. No. Whoops.
In 1902, the 10 hottest years in the planet's history, the last 10 in order.
And something I mean, it connects because Teddy was a big environmentalist.
He is. Is he the last Republican environmentalist?
No, Nixon.
Nixon is. That's right.
Nixon's the last one.
Right, because Nixon creates the Environmental Protection Agency.
Yeah. Teddy did a lot of national parks.
Well, he created the national park system. And, you know, I mean, would we agree that they're both top seven presidents?
I would if I knew more about Teddy, I'd probably argue top five. But yeah, I'd say top seven based on what I know now.
Right. I mean, certainly. The Sherman Antitrust Act, which they had completely ignored, he begins just claiming it as an executive right.
Yeah.
He was big on executive privilege.
So was Franklin.
Yeah.
They both are.
Right. I mean, it's, yes, because they're rich guys who are used to getting their way.
Yeah.
He is the first one to bring labor into the White House.
Yes.
He
intervened in the railroad strike. He was the first president to intervened. I mean, not.
No, he's not the first one to intervene.
Cleveland sent troops.
So did Benjamin Harrison.
But he tried to, like, intervene in the way of, like, getting a deal. Using federal military.
He's the first one to mediate.
Yeah.
And
even though we had no power to do so. It was awesome. Why not? Why can't the president be the mediator?
And, you know,
it's an industry.
The labor.
It affects the public good.
In the railroad strike, labor did less well than they would have had he just allowed it to play out, probably. But better, maybe better, because there were no shootings.
Yeah, nobody died.
Nobody died. And he was a labor guy all the way.
Yes.
Where Teddy was not great. The one place he was not great. Well, there are two places he was not great. He's probably more interventionist than we would prefer. Although he did get out of the Philippines and said, he did say he pulled out of the Philippines. He put troops in the Philippines and then pulled them out and said, we should not be involved in Asian affairs. Which, if only Kennedy and Nixon and Johnson had heard that, that would have been boffo.
Yeah.
It was just too far away.
Nobody cares. They can't see it. Especially back then when it took you like 3 weeks to hear what was going on. Who gives a shit?
Well,
they'll never be there. They have no idea what's going on.
We had telegraph by then. So like we knew it within a day.
Yeah. Whoop-hoo.
But like it was very hard to convince people. 1, 2, 3, 4. What am I fighting for? I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. But Kennedy was, I mean, he did kind of realize that he wasn't great on race. There's only one Roosevelt who's good on race.
Yeah, I think FDR is better than Teddy, but I think Eleanor is better than FDR.
It's close. I mean, he didn't try to pass the anti-lynching laws. Now, to be fair, the anti-lynching laws were passed under the Obama administration.
Yeah.
Like, it took till then for them to say, yeah, it's probably wrong to just lynch people.
And also...
And Rand Paul voted against it, tried to filibuster it.
But also, like, you know, back then there are political realities about what gets you reelected. And,
well, no, absolutely. I mean,
you know, that was FDR's biggest problem. I mean, he tried to integrate the FDR, you know, tried to integrate the most he could with federal programs, but he didn't think necessarily that it was worth sending, you know, somebody into Arkansas if they're going to vote Democrat.
Truman did.
Yes.
Truman... A very underrated president domestically.
Yes.
The atomic bombs are an issue. But
the last president to not earn a college degree, I believe.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the last one ever.
Oh, for sure.
Well, it'll never happen again. Have you, by the way, did you see Oppenheimer?
Not yet. No, I know. It's a failure.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
I'm looking forward to checking it out.
Did you see Flowers of the...
Not yet.
Yeah. I just, you know, I'm going to do it as soon as I can clear 7 hours.
Double feature.
But like you know, his foreign policy was what it was. And, but in his, he also did, he did stop Japanese-Russian aggression. Like, he was able to, in a way that a lot of later kind of sword-rattling presidents were not.
Like, he did things with foreign policy that set the stage for later actions by the executive that were, have not historically worked out well, you know, for our country, particularly like Latin America.
I would say the president, in reading it again, the president he reminds me the most of, with the exception of the fact that he was anti-corruption and like very strongly anti-corruption, is Nixon. He is effective where Nixon was effective.
Yeah.
And he's blind in the spots Nixon was blind. It was different 60 years later. You know, like, times change. And also, Nixon was just cravenly corrupt, and Teddy wasn't. But then Teddy was super rich and Nixon wasn't. So there was that too. And then we're going to go to Franklin. And Zach, you're going to run the show here because you know more about Franklin Roosevelt than anybody I know. He had been, had he been married? He had lost his, lost in a race for vice president against Harding.
He was going to, his career started when he was going to run for state rep and it's going to be his entry into politics, and the incumbent decided to run again. So he said, okay, I'll just run for the state Senate, which was a Republican seat in 1910. And he had a car because he was rich, and rich people had cars back then when right. most people didn't. And he drove around the whole district campaigning and won by like 2,500 votes to become a state senator. Then he became Undersecretary of the Navy, similar to Teddy, he believed, in building up the Navy and the naval capabilities. He started the Naval Reserve. But also, he was Undersecretary of the Navy during World War One, so he outwardly supported kind of Wilsonian diplomacy overseas, which was a mess, I guess. The League of Nations was a mess, but FDR supported it.
Anything that's described as Wilsonian is problematic.
Yeah. He was undersecretary during World War One, built up the Navy, visited ports, and then after the war immediately undertook basically like demobilizing the military. He then steps away from public life and suffers from polio.
Correct. 1921, he contracts polio.
Which really shapes who he is as a person his whole life, because he spends most of his money that he had at the time opening up this kind of hot spring
in Georgia
resort in Georgia, which he
also... What was it called?
I just read this. I just remember it was a hot springs resort.
We'll call it the Georgia Hot Springs.
Yeah, but it also helped.
By the way, also a great 1980s movie.
Georgia Hot Springs. I've read it down.
But as,
it probably wasn't, but I think it could have been.
As he was doing this, he brought together like a lot of doctors and physical therapy and a lot of people, and he ran kind of the whole hot springs. He became known as Doc Roosevelt. Because he basically funded this kind of alternate healing for people that were paralyzed. Was first in his country, but he did it because he had the means to do it. He then becomes governor of New York. Yep. Makes a deal with Tammany Hall. He had been fighting against Tammany Hall his whole career, which was the corrupt party boss in New York State. Becomes governor. And in his, one of the first things he does is do this thing called the Seaborne Commission, which leads to the widespread resignation of New York public officials for being essentially bribed or in no-show jobs,
right,
and ends Tammany Hall's control over the New York City Democratic machine while he was governor. He was only governor for a couple of years because in 1932, he runs for president.
Correct.
But as governor, he does the first in the nation unemployment insurance to help people who had lost their job. He worked with labor unions to spur economic growth in the state. He worked on something that basically everything he did as governor, he just did on a national level. His first New Deal was what he did in New York. Basically, what becomes the Temporary Assistance Relief Act or something like that. He does that in New York and then does it in as president, like 30 days in.
He creates Social Security.
Yeah.
He creates Medicare.
No.
No. Medicare's later. He creates Social Security. Medicare's not until the 60s.
Yeah. That's Johnson. That's right. The Great Society.
But he creates Social Security. He creates work.
WPA.
Yeah, WPA.
The TVA. He brings electricity to the southern part of our country.
To the southern part of our country. The South, who had no electricity, condemns the Democrat who brought it to them. He pulls the country out of just utter despair, setting the way you do this. I mean, it's Obama's plan on when the housing crisis. It's the plan of the Senate during COVID. Like, you just invest. In his second term, he tries to pull it back the way Obama did, and it just doesn't work.
But I'm glad you mentioned Obama, because they came in with similar, though not that similar, economic conditions. I mean, it was the Great Recession. We were never at 25% unemployment.
No, it was...
You know, like FDR had.
Well, people say it was the worst crisis since then, but like the since is doing a lot of work then.
But Andrew, I'd like to get your opinion on this, because we both lived through 08,
sure,
the economic crash, Obama coming in. And so in his inaugural address, Roosevelt blamed the financial crisis on bankers and financiers and said, quote, "Primarily this is because rulers of the exchange of mankind's goods have failed through their own stubbornness and through their own incompetence, have admitted their failure, and have abdicated. Practices of the unscrupulous money changers stand indicted in the court of public opinion, rejected by the hearts and minds of men. True story, they have tried, but their efforts have been cast in the pattern of an outworn tradition. Faced by failure of credit, they have proposed only the lending of more money. Stripped of the lure of profit by which to induce our people to follow their false leadership, they have resorted to exhortations, pleading tearfully for restored confidence. The money changers have fled from their high seats in the temple of our civilization. We may now restore that temple to the ancient truths. The measure of the restoration lies in the extent to which we apply social values more noble than mere monetary profit." Imagine if Obama said anything remotely close to that in 08 or 09.
The John Favreau's and the speechwriters of Obama, like, they weren't.
They would have lit a fire.
Yeah.
They were not spitting harsh truths.
It is.
And he's right.
I would
he's
be
absolutely
he's right. Well, he's, he says well, the thing that's wrong I, in our I, in our I, system I, is I, bankers, I would, which
be,
is right.
I would be remiss if I did not point out that the term money changers is a loaded term.
Is that veiled towards?
Yes, it's absolutely a loaded term. And here's the thing the Roosevelts all had in common. They were anti-Semites. Eleanor, too. I'm reading some of it. Like, I almost wanted to have another child just so I could name her Eleanor. And, well, except I couldn't, because if you had a child, you'd name her Eleanor. Like, Eleanor is the name. And some of her comments about Jewish people, problematic. He is unafraid of the idea of a class war.
Yes.
Even though it's his class that he's calling war against. Yeah. And
he is also, in the political sense, the only dictator we've ever... Well, the second dictator we've ever had as president.
Lincoln.
Lincoln is the first. FDR is as close as we've ever come to...
No, that's not true. Trump's as close as we've ever come. Because
No,
Roosevelt, because neither Lincoln nor Roosevelt would have tried to overturn an election. He barely won, and there was never any claims that you can't count the votes. Trump is the closest, but
I mean, FDR served won so many times they changed their constitution.
Right, there is that.
But
he followed the constitution.
Yeah, also, the only social democratic president we've ever had who was so popular he got elected four times.
Oh, absolutely. No, you are foolish if you feel like Roosevelt isn't. Roosevelt's the most important person in American history in the 20th century. I don't think it's close.
There is an alternate timeline where Henry Wallace is Roosevelt's vice president in the fourth term, and we are an entirely different country than what we are.
So can we talk about this right now?
Yeah.
Because this gets us to Eleanor. Eleanor was the one that suggested Henry Wallace.
Yes.
Eleanor, Henry Wallace, tremendous friends. Not involved romantically because
Eleanor's a lesbian.
She's a gay, right? Yeah. And Henry Wallace is weird. But the British government becomes obsessed with the fact Churchill, who's not related to the Roosevelts, although that's always been said, and I thought he was, but he's not. But Churchill and Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, have known each other since before World War I, because he was Secretary of the Navy. Churchill was Secretary of the Navy. And Roosevelt was Undersecretary of the Navy. Yeah, Assistant Secretary of the Navy.
It's that stuff that QAnon or the Q people keep pointing out. Like, all these people know each other. And it's like, yeah.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, no kidding. They all know each other.
They all know each other. There's a thing called the elites. They know each other. So the British send what they believe are their two most charming spies to befriend Eleanor. And to try to get her to convince Franklin to get rid of Henry Wallace. Those two spies are Andrew, Ian Fleming, and Roald Dahl. Those are the two
literary giants,
and they are spies. Like they're supposedly attachés, but they spend their time trying to get Eleanor to really push this. They, of course, discover that she is involved in a lesbian relationship, and then the British government is pushing for them to use it as blackmail, and they just don't.
Yeah, Roald Dahl wasn't he a queer guy?
He was an anti-Semite as well.
Yeah. I'm sure Fleming was, too.
Sure. Sure. Diamonds are forever. Yeah,
in the 40s, America's history with the Holocaust, people didn't really give. There was an American Nazi Party political event in New York City that drew millions of people in the 30s.
By the way, the Texas GOP
The Texas GOP
just voted yesterday that to not ban people who participate in Holocaust denier or Nazi events. That being said, it was Eleanor that pushed Franklin every day to accept more Holocaust immigrants. And Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the second or third or fourth, the numbers keep changing.
It's like George Foreman's kids.
Right. But anyway, he said, her son said that her whole life, the thing she regretted the most was that she was not able to move Franklin to accept far more Nazi immigrants. And so I do think the yin and the yang of that relationship. I assume we're all Eleanor people. She's by far the most progressive. She's a Henry Wallace person. And she loses.
Made chairs. That's awesome.
She loses that fight.
Yeah.
She is on the committee that drafts the UN war crimes and human rights positions. She is the lead on that committee because Truman put her there mostly to get her like busy and doing shit. She is the only first lady. She had a daily column 6 days a week in the newspaper syndicated from 1932 till her death in 1962.
I want to touch on that because, Andrew, I want to get your opinion because you mentioned Trump before and the dictator, and I said, you know, FDR in the political sense was. I mean, he kept going until he died. He refused to give up power.
Sure.
I mean, he won democratically, so he's not, but.
Yeah, there's a big difference there.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean,
Saddam. He didn't lose the election and then say, well, I still get it.
But FDR, starting when he was governor, moving on to when he was president, did fireside chats, which connected him to the American public in a way that presidents to this day, aside from Trump, have not spoken to the American people like that. And Eleanor did the same thing. And I think that that's the appeal that there is out there, is that people don't feel talked to in a depression or coming out of a political depression or malaise. Being talked to by a president is a special connection that I think people share.
Did the fireside chats kind of set in motion what's become now? And how often do they do these, like, the presidential addresses? Is it biannual, two a year, where the president gets up?
Oh, the State of the Union is in our Constitution.
Not the State of the Union. The president doesn't... He does a Rose Garden address.
Are you talking about, like, the Rose Garden address, the Oval Office address? Like, yeah, that...
How often does that happen? Or is that like a fixed thing?
Yeah.
Oh, it's not like a... It's not set.
Biden's done it.
I don't
like
mean
once.
The address, the State of the Union. Right. I mean, kind of no...
You tend to do it during crises,
right?
Which makes people not want to do it because they don't want to admit they're in a crisis. In my lifetime, the one who was the most available to the American people was Clinton. Clinton was...
Well, he was a little too available.
Right. Clinton was the guy who kind of ran on the idea that, like, well, you'd want to have a beer with me, wouldn't you? And it's like that became, unfortunately, in 2000, the big question. Well, who'd you rather have a beer with, Al Gore or George W. Bush? Well, the answer is George W. Bush. He knew Nolan Ryan. What the fuck does that have to do with running the country? It has nothing to do. But Clinton, who politically I don't agree with in almost anything, but was just the first kind of, and much more so than anybody else. Like, people thought Obama was cool, but, like, Obama just kind of kept his distance. He wasn't that person. Trump was that person, but it's like, Jesus, he was like that guy at the bar where you just change bars.
You don't like the people that find that kind of cool aren't the people you want to associate with.
No.
You know what I mean?
Right, but it was Clinton, but Roosevelt did, and his wife did, because they did have nothing but crises for 12 years. It was the Depression, then it was more Depression because he bent to pressure to get out of some of the policies that saved the country, which Obama did as well. It's really hard to hold that, and Biden did as well. It's just hard to hold it. But and then we were in World War II. So it was just crisis after crisis after crisis. And he was the right man for the time. I don't think, you know, I mean,
yeah,
Jesus.
I mean, he led us through
the worst times of our lives.
He led us through the biggest economic collapse our country has ever seen. I mean, it was nearly the end of our modern financial system. And then he led us through an international crisis that nobody had seen up until that
time. And also a drought that no one had ever seen, because it also coincides with the Dust Bowl. And it is true. You go through the Midwest, I've seen it, and you're driving, and suddenly there's these rows of trees, inexplicably. And that was because somebody said, well, this will prevent the soil from being torn away. And Roosevelt said, let's try it. And that was kind of the cool thing about Roosevelt. Like, let's try it was kind of his go-to.
He's you know, I think that there are two presidents that are head and shoulders above everybody else, Lincoln and FDR. I go back and forth between which one I think is better. I view FDR through a much more modern lens because it's within the last 100 years.
Yep.
Than I do Clinton, or than I do Lincoln. But I mean, FDR is his version of the Democratic Party. Like, when I talk about what kind of Democrat I am, I still to this day say I'm an FDR Democrat.
And realistically, that still is the core of the party.
Yeah, that Bernie Sanders
is an FDR Democrat. You know, AOC is an FDR Democrat. Sherrod Brown's an FDR Democrat. Like, it's not, you don't have to be way to the left, but you've got to be not center left. You're just left. And Eleanor would have absolutely been a squad person. Like, she would have been, she is very much to the left. And I think her husband benefited from, because there has never been, other than Hillary, Hillary's the only other first lady that had actual policy jobs. Eleanor didn't have a policy job. She just got involved in policy and criticized her husband publicly.
Yeah, I think FDR's best moments were with the influence of Eleanor, personally and in policy. I mean, FDR was a social Democrat. He believed in social democracy, socialism. His second Bill of Rights, he laid out, and then he died, and we gave it over to that dumb farmer, Truman, who ruined everything and called Hoover. First call Truman made after he became president was to Hoover. Who gives a fuck what that guy said?
He
said in his second Bill of Rights, guaranteed housing, guaranteed income, guaranteed health care, guaranteed retirement.
To be fair to Truman, he integrated the federal government and Roosevelt refused to.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. That's better.
I mean, that's better.
Yeah.
Like, four white guys can't just shrug that off. Like, that's a real thing. And he did follow, like, they thought he would undo a lot of his policies. He didn't undo them. He didn't do much more, but he didn't undo them. And he wasn't a farmer.
He gave us the Wagner Act, which amended the NLRA, just swung all the power and labor organizing back to management.
There is that. I'm not one of these Truman's the best three president
people. No, he's not in the best 10.
It gets so sparse. You get after six, it gets so sparse. Anyway, but I would say of the dynasties, political dynasties we did, this is the most relevant. Like, there are no Adamsonians anymore. There are no Bush people anymore.
We still argue about Social Security. Congress is debating that, like, this month is debating Social Security. It's a policy that we still have in effect that he put into play 80 years ago.
And is unequivocally the most popular American policy.
Yeah.
Like, it benefits me personally. The idea that we're going to take it away is just like a non-starter.
All it is the government acting as a bank. It's your own money. We're just going to hold on to it for a bit and then give it back to you. We pay into it and then we get it back.
Right. The dirty secret is white people get more and black people get less.
Yes.
As they put it. Like, that's, but a lot of this is funded by the fact that African-American healthcare is so atrocious that people die before they collect. But, so that's a cheery way to end this. But we are who we are. This is the Bill Bradley Collective. Good night.